Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right. All right. Good morning. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast. I am Tom, joined today by a guy that I've started following really through the pandemic. Thank you for that. Keeping me entertained.
My pleasure.
Michael Palmisano. How are you, brother?
Dude, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's it's been one of the silver linings during the pandemic that I got to meet so many people like you, and the community has just been flourishing since that. And it's been a treat for me. It's been a real treat. So thanks for inviting me.
Well, it is fun. You know, we watch people on YouTube. You, like I said, the pandemic started. I play guitar, not really anymore. You know, I was that guy that learned enough of the song till you recognized it, and then let me know that you knew what song I was playing, and then I moved on to the next song.
Yeah.
You know, I played guitar for the chicks, let's be honest. And but I still played big Metallica, big thrash band. I watched one of your shows the other night with Anthrax, old band from my time. Funny. The weird thing about also your show is I watch them, but it'll be like 4 months ago. I don't know. Are you still, do you record every day? Are you still putting out new shows every day? Or are those old ones that I've been watching?
No, the Anthrax is from last week.
So that was a new one.
Yeah. So that was a new one. So I shoot for 3 to 4, videos on YouTube a week, another one lesson on my website a week, and then I shoot to make a new course for my website, twice a year or so. It varies, it ebbs and flows, but that's basically my content creation plan,
Well, I can tell you just from watching your show, I wanted to tell you, you do an amazing job.
Thanks,
you're
man.
Very entertaining guy. I appreciate it. I mean, you show your emotions. I mean, there's been some shows where you've been a little emotional, which I appreciate. Yeah. You're consistent and you just do great stuff. And your guitar playing is amazing. I love it. I've watched some of your live streams with the band. Yeah. Great job.
Thanks, man.
But as a guy watching the show, you try to gather what you can gather. And I, as I watch you, like there's points in the summer last year, you were tanned up. Right.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned that you guys had been to the beach.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and I put that in the back shelf. And then I was sitting with my wife because I make her watch your show with me. And I go, I bet That's this amazing. Guy, because you're from Baltimore, right?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. You're from Baltimore. I go, I bet you this guy's been to Rehoboth. I bet you he's been to Rehoboth or Dewey or Ocean City. I mean, anybody that usually is in Baltimore ends up at the beach at some point, right?
Yeah. So I have spent, I spent four or five straight summers, lived in Ocean City. I started summering in Ocean City and getting jobs when I was 16. And I did 1, 2, 3, 4. So I guess my second year into college or so, I stopped going to the beach for the summer. But I have so many friends that stayed, and I've been to Rehoboth a bunch, been to Dewey a bunch, Bethany. I love the beach. It has a very fond place in my heart. And when you said that, that's where you were based and you were doing a podcast, I was like, absolutely, let's do it.
Well, Thank gosh, because it would have probably been hard to do the Rehoboth Social if you'd never been to Rehoboth, but
yeah,
you have. So
I
and haven't. Hopefully you'll come down again, and maybe one of these days I can get you in the studio and we can chat in person, you know, hopefully this summer we get back to.
I'd love to. Let's see. Last time I was down there, maybe it wasn't this past summer because of COVID, but the summer before that, you know, we brought our kids down. I have cousins that live in Dewey. We stayed in Dewey, came into Rehoboth, you know, took them to ride the rides and went out to dinner and do all that thing. And I love it. I love the beach so much.
Yeah. Well, we live in an amazing little community. It is going through a transition though, because you know, all the stuff that's been going on, everybody's moving here.
Really?
Oh,
tell me
New York's emptying out. New York and New Jersey are emptying out into Delaware.
You can feel it.
Oh, I own a hair salon. I mean, I live, you know, where, so if you're, I don't know if you're familiar with the towns around Rehoboth, but there's a town, it's called Milton, Delaware.
Yep.
And so my hair salon's in Milton. Mm-hmm. And when I came out here 11 years ago, I used to call this the island of unwanted toys. You know, we all want to be in Rehoboth or we want to be in Lewis because that's where all the people are. But, you know, then there's reality of what we can afford. And I could be on the island of unwanted toys. That's what I could afford. And today
is that where the sign is that says that on your way back that says if you lived here you'd be home already? Is that in Milton? You know what I'm talking about? On 404?
No. 404 is that runs out through Georgetown and then
that's into what I'm thinking, 50. Georgetown. Yeah.
No, that's a different town, but the point is that now my salon is in the middle of a huge housing boom.
Mm.
I mean, they're putting 600 houses up here just up the street. This development that I'm in is a new development. It's crazy. And everybody's kind of bailing out of the big cities. And, you know, I guess part of me understands, but it is what it is. We're lucky to be here.
Hey man, it's going to be good for you.
Yeah. It's going to be good for me. Yeah. I want to retire. I want to do what you do.
I'm very far from retired.
Yeah, no, me too, man. I've got three children that all like food and entertainment and, you know, lifestyle. And so, no, I'll be working till, what do they say? I work till my first day off, which is the day they put me in the casket.
Yeah, exactly. I have four children and I'm in the same boat. I have no expectations of retirement ever.
No.
But that's okay.
So what I was going to say is, you know, you just gather what I can gather through watching your videos. Clearly, you're educated in music.
Yes.
I thought it would be fun to just kind of learn some of the stuff that you're free, you know, that you're okay with sharing, that we don't find out through watching your videos. Like, where did you go to school? How long have you been in the YouTube business? Because you do a great job at it. It's clearly, I'm guessing that's kind of turned into your job now.
Yeah. So what you see from me in the videos and in the React videos is just a small portion of the story. So I'll do the best I can with this to explain it from my perspective.
Sure.
I grew up in Baltimore, been playing guitar my whole life. I don't remember not playing. So, I mean, there are pictures of me that, you know, from playing when I was 4 or 5 years old. And, I took lessons growing up, played in local bands with friends. But it was something that was private to me. It was private to me, but I always felt like I had a knack for it. I was very, very passionate about music, always have, but didn't come from a musical family. It was an entirely intrinsic thing. And I was in my second year of school for business down in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's just one of those things hit you. It's one of those pivotal moments in life where I was like, you know what? I need to see if I'm good enough. You know, I can always come back to school. I can always do this. I can do whatever, but I really feel that I can, you know, I'm good enough to make a living at this. And so I decided to go out to Hollywood and go to a school called the Musicians Institute, which is the West Coast version of Berkeley, if you will. It is a performance-based, almost like a tech school for people who want to get hired gun gigs, to get studio gigs. It's not a conservatory, right? So the whole thing, a lot of that what you see me do on YouTube are the skills I learned out there, because in addition to your curriculum of learning you know, improvisation and your scales and your theory and all that stuff, you have to do what's called 10 live playing workshops a week, meaning you get together with people you've never played before, someone in the bass program, someone in the vocal program, someone in the drum program, whatever. And you get together and you learn songs and you have to play them in front of your peers 10 times a week with people you don't know in 10 different genres. And you have to do that 2 years straight. And that's basically what the whole school is about. And when I graduated, that was
Does that help you prepare for, like, if you're going to be like a gig performer? Like another guy I watch on YouTube is a guy that plays drums on a cruise ship. I mean, he doesn't know what he's going to be playing. Are you good?
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on one second. I'm just going to turn this fan off. I mean, I know you can hear it. Hold on.
I hear it.
I know you're going to have to edit that out.
I'm not editing anything.
Okay. Okay.
It's all, this is just, you know, we are what we are. But I watched that this guy that is a drummer on a cruise ship, and he basically shows up and he's on the ship for whatever.
Yeah.
It could be like a Britney Spears girl, you know, doing Britney songs, or he doesn't ever know. And he's just got to be ready to play really anything. So does that kind of help you prepare for that?
Yeah, 100%. Because at the core essence of every song, you know, there's a basic harmony, a basic melody, and a basic rhythm. And when you learn hundreds and hundreds of songs and play them and perform them with different people, you become very acquainted with the different variations that are commonly used, you know, the different melodies, broad harmonies, stroke, and rhythms. Right. Yeah, the broad strokes, right? and so that's kind of what I teach on the YouTube channel. I play tracks and give people the broad strokes as if you brought a song to me, I was going to teach it to you, or what I would write down for myself if I'm taking a note. So someone bringing a blues, be like, okay, this is a 1-4-5 in C sharp. I know there's a bridge that does this. You know, it's shorthand, but it's the broad strokes of what makes the song what it is, so you can get through it. Anyway, so I was in school, and when I got there, I think this was 2003 or four, I can't remember. But when I got there, GIT was a very strong pipeline for work. And that's why I went there instead of just like hustling in bands, because I wanted to hone my craft and see if I could land a gig with a touring band and do the hired gun thing. That's really what I wanted to do. And I went there and did very well and all that, but I wasn't one of the best ones, but I did really well. But by the time I graduated in 2006 or so, you know, YouTube, iTunes came out and just demolished the whole industry. When I went in there, it was starting to happen. You know, Napster kind of started around 99, the implosion and everything you saw with Metallica, Lars Ulrich, that was right there. But it hadn't, you know, there was no streaming yet. There was no, like, they were still trying to get a handle on it. And so there were still like DVDs in my library. We were still getting paper things. There was nothing of what I do there. And by the time I graduated, again, YouTube had came out, iTunes had came out, and the industry had, instead of fighting the digital thing, has started leaning into it, and all the A&R money evaporated. So I think maybe 100-150 guys, maybe out of a class of 200, when I first joined there or went to school, left with gigs. And my year, I mean, it was like 15 people. So, wow. And it happened in a 2-year span. It just exploded. So I say all that to say, the first part of this story is that the internet ruined my plans.
Yeah.
So then I did what everybody did. I moved home because I was broke, started teaching and playing in local bands, came down and played the beach a bunch, you know, did Fagers, did Secrets, never did Dewey, because Dewey always seems to hire Delaware or Philly bands. I mean, you know this, it's like its own little island. Like those that play OC don't play Delaware, and like never the two shall meet. It's a thing.
You know, excuse me. My experience with Dewey was Love, See Mama Jump.
Yeah. And Kristen and the Noise and all that. Right. Yeah.
And then I got sober. So I don't go to Dewey anymore. So Dewey got me sober.
Yeah.
I only had a couple years of that. And then I wasn't professional enough to hang. So I had to step aside for the next young guy.
I completely and totally understand. But anyway, so I, you know, gigged and taught. Yeah. And I did very well with both of those. You know, I was doing 110, 120 local dates a year in a corporate band. So we did bars, weddings, clubs, casinos, you know, pay to play stuff, and then taught private lessons in a music school back in Baltimore, doing 50, 60 students a week, and then did rock band coaching as well for kids. And I did all that for about 7 years. And in that process, I got married, started having kids. And around 2012 or so, I started to see people like your Marty Schwartzes and Justin Sandercoes, like the early adopters of YouTube, start making a living doing it and teaching guitar online. And my wife was a special ed teacher. And so she was never going to make any more money. It was very solid, but it's low paying and secure. Underpaid. Yeah, underpaid, but secure and all that. And I, you know, did just like you, something hourly. So you can charge more for your time, but you don't have, you can't make more time.
Right.
And since I had been operating literally at my ceiling, you know, over 100 dates a year, 50, 60 students a week, and coaching bands for almost 7 years. Wow. And without the income going up, because remember, gigging musicians get paid now what they got paid like 30 years ago. You know, it's like it hasn't gone up at all.
Right.
And lessons go up incrementally. But point of the story is we were 29 and 30 with two kids at our maximum earning potential in our jobs,
right,
maxed out on time. And I started seeing the early adopters of YouTube and the internet start making a living doing it. And I said, you know what? I can scale myself. I can do this. And I loved teaching. And I felt that I was a better teacher than player, even though I knew I was a very strong player. And I made the second big pivotal choice in my life. And that is to choose the internet and education instead of choosing bigger stages, bigger bands, bigger clubs, you know, chasing that dream. I said, okay, I'm going to build a life around my family with this skill set in this new frontier. And I don't know how, but I'm going to make this choice to choose the internet and to choose education with the skill set I've been working my whole life on.
Well,
and that was in 2013.
Well, and if I could just say one thing, you know, there's, sure, you know, the YouTube is full of educators, right? And then YouTube's full of entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
But to tie the two together, you know, if I'm watching something, and I majority of the things that I watch are on YouTube, I'm just, I call it educational television. I just like learning whatever, right?
I love it.
And you know, you're not the only guy out there, you know, kind of doing this. I mean,
true,
but you're the only guy that I watch. And it's because you've figured out how to be a teacher and entertain and tie the two together. And, you know, you're sitting there saying stuff. I mean, you said a few things, you know, I was in 10th grade. I had guitar. It was my first class. Yeah. That was about the extent of my education in guitar. So I know nothing about really what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I've been watching so long. I'm like, I'm starting to pick up some of these things.
That's what it's all about, man.
But I haven't been, you know, I'm not so intimidated that I don't want to stick around for the entertainment as well.
Yeah.
So not everybody does that. I do not watch a lot of people. I don't watch anybody that does this. You, I watch. I mean, seriously, I love,
I appreciate that.
And I'm also, and I think I mentioned this to you in the pod, in the text, is that, you know, we do 11 podcasts here. I own this network, yeah. You know, and one of the podcasts that, you know, people come to, like, we want to do a music podcast. Will you help us? Will you do it with us? I'm like, great. And I'm 52. Mm-hmm. You know what it's like, you know, I say I stopped taking resumes for new music at about 19. You know, I was locked into Metallica, Pearl Jam, and AC/DC, and I wasn't really taking new music in. I was good.
Yeah.
And now they're like, you need to bring new music. I'm like, oh, brother. And, you know, I have a 15-year-old. I try to get some music out of him.
Hard.
He's big on The Weeknd, right? Who I thought did a fantastic Super Bowl show. I'm sticking up for The Weeknd.
He did. And my friend Derek that I went to GIT with did the sound for him, and he also did the sound for Bruno Mars. As far as I know, he's the only sound guy to do two Super Bowls.
Yeah. I get so frustrated when people badmouth that halftime show, because, you know, we're in a pandemic, people. Let's remind ourselves of that. That was a great show. But
awesome.
You know, so he's not divulging any information for as far as new music. You know, don't tell anybody, man, but I'm getting all my new music from you,
dude. and you know, I love,
and I'm
that.
Killing it,
dude. That's great. That's great. I love,
I told you my
that.
Playlist. We're doing this podcast tomorrow. This is my playlist for tomorrow.
Let me hear it.
Brandi Carlile.
Dude, how great is she?
Dude, she's freaking great. And so that song, what was it? And the man of the broken, you know, the Elton John song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
Across the Water.
Yes, the Madman
Across the Water.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, what a beautiful song. I'm like, shit, I got to find that song. So I'm rummaging through her playlist on Spotify.
Yeah.
It's not there. But then I found a Bruce Hornsby version of it that put in the playlist. So that's your help right there.
Yeah.
And then I also found in the Brandi Carlile Storytellers album, a Pearl Jam song that they teamed up with Brandi Carlile. We do a Pearl Jam podcast. I brought that song to the podcast today.
People love it.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. So that's part you.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's called, the name of the song is Again Today. And she comes up on stage. It's on YouTube. They bring her up on stage to do the song. Great song.
I'm writing it down.
She do a Pearl Jam song, but I'm not sure Mike McCready and Stone Gossard are complicated enough for some of the stuff that you like, but
I like
a suggestion.
If you watch the channel, and we're all like this, you know, I like anything that's good, anything that's real, anything that connects. It can be complicated. It can be three chords
like
and the truth. It can
a little
be anything.
Bit with, I felt like you struggled a little with the Anthrax.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing with metal, and, I actually come from a pretty strong metal background. You know, when I was, you know, that is the music of my adolescence.
Me too.
You know, the grunge and the metal. But the thing about that genre is that it's not based on progressions. It's not based on those broad strokes we talked about. It's based on very specific, precise riffs and licks.
Well, and there's a lot of right hand stuff in there too, that picking, that
exactly. Yeah. It's strict, you know. It's not like a blues, you're like, okay, it's these chord changes and this rhythm and this key, and this is what happens with the melody. That's not what it is. You can't just like sit in with a metal band.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have to know every part. Right. Otherwise, you screw the song up. It is absolutely not something that you bring to a jam. It's not, that's why you never ever see metal artists sit in with each other ever, you know.
Well, people go, you know, because I grew up playing metal.
Yeah.
You know, I graduated in 86. I mean, you know, I sat in the parking lot and listened to Ride the Lightning. I saw Metallica at a Cowboys bar in Albuquerque on Kill 'Em All.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
now that is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, those, but you know, here's my guitar. Let's hear you play. I can, you know, go into Orion and they're like, okay, I don't know what that is, but that's what I, you know, that's on Master of Puppets, by the way.
Yeah.
Orion.
Oh dude, I know it.
Yeah. So let me finish this playlist. Cause it's such a, I'm so excited because it's great. Okay. So we got four Brandi Carlile songs, and then we go into Hers. Dude, what a touching story that was.
Isn't it crazy? That's the thing, man. For those that aren't familiar with the band, or I don't know if you shared the story, but it's these two artists that, you know, died tragically in a car wreck, and someone just shot me.
It was actually three. Their manager also died.
He didn't include that in the email. I didn't know that.
Yep. The manager died. They were hit head on by a drunk driver going the wrong way on I-10, which is, I grew up in Albuquerque, so I'm familiar with I-10. I've ridden that road.
Me too.
And it's unfortunate. And that, you know, that was a tough show. I thought you had to do, I mean, you did a fantastic, but what a, you know, to like kind of, because dude, that bass player, what, man, he is fantastic, right?
Dude, he was great.
He was so good.
Having so much fun.
And it's hard to be like celebrating, but at the same time, you know, kind of trying to still be respectful and mourning, and
it's
you did a great job.
I appreciate that, man. I mean, yeah. It's true. What I love most about that is that person, and if anybody that's watching has seen, you know, more of my videos, I do this quite frequently, where if someone sends me an email like that, and it just touches me, I just stop everything and hit the camera and just do it, because it touches me that they felt comfortable sharing it with me, you know, because they thought, like, the fact that someone, like, to me, those things are permanently intertwined. The fact that I chose to do it is because the person who sent me that knew that I would appreciate it. And that connection that's happening, even though we don't know each other virtually during the pandemic, is a really fun. It's a phenomenon to me, because I feel grateful, and people like you who reach out to me, like, I can just tell by the syntax of the text that we get each other, you know, right. And it's wild, because it's completely virtual.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm, you know, I would have never heard of that band. So, you know, they're on my playlist for our Discovery Music podcast. And it's not, the story's obviously an interesting story, but, you know, on top of that, they're very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And I loved, it was actually one of my favorite episodes of yours, is just, you know, how you talked about how that bass player hung him out there, you know, and you just see, you know, you go, oh, and he went a little flat, you know, because the bass is what keeps the tone, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And he did. He's like, you know, he just like stopped and just let him hang out there by himself. And then he just came back in, and they're talented. I mean, phenomenal.
Yeah, no, they really, really are. And those are the little things I like to point out to people, because if people haven't played in bands, you know, you don't always realize what you're seeing, you know, the onstage cues,
right?
And how the singer is, more than anything else, follow the bass, you know, and
I forget the band that you did. It was you've done some great music. I have no notes. This is just me chatting, so I don't do anything. But
I don't have any notes.
I there was a band that you did, and and I love how you point out, watch that keyboardist looking at that bass player, watching that drummer, and they're just like, you know, and they just work behind the scenes so well. I don't know. I appreciate that you point that stuff out, because it is, I probably saw it, you know, because I think, like you said, I love that stuff. You have a band, and then you have behind the scenes. And
because that's what I know. Like I said, you know, I was never the tip of the iceberg. I was always a piece of the iceberg underneath the water, you know, working with the drummer and the bass player and the keyboard player and the backup singers to support, you know, the vocalist, the showpiece, everybody that's in the front. And anybody that's been in a working band will tell you that, I mean, that's very much how it works. Like, there's all the focus is on the tip of the iceberg, but everything underneath it is it's not static. It's an organic moving thing. And we communicate constantly, both what we can hear, our body language, and all of that. And so I feel very obligated to point all that stuff out, because that's what makes it work. And I really appreciate seeing pros know their job and know what they're doing and know that they are in support of this, you know, of this greater thing, and not everything is an opportunity to show how good they are or whatever, like playing to the song. Anytime I see bands play exceptionally well to support the song, I just, those are the people that I have the most respect for. Cause at the end of the day, really, I want to hear great songs with great stories that, you know, talk about people and places that I identify with.
And this is, I think this is another example of one of those bands. And this is the, and I'm wrapping the playlist up with a little Josh Smith.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Dude, I mumbled these words and I maybe will regret it, but I told somebody the other day, I think he might be a little bit better. There's no clouds or lightning than Stevie Ray Vaughan. Oh, geez. I said it. I apologize, but my gosh.
You know,
now he also had Stevie Ray Vaughan in his life at some point to, you know, yeah, maybe get some of that energy, but I love those, you know, he does such great little,
he's an unbelievable player. He is he's certainly one of the best in the game right now.
I've watched his video. It looks like he's in a, you know, in a fire hall. I mean, he looks like he's playing, and is it because, I don't know, what is it? Why is, how come he is not huge?
Songs.
Maybe he is. I don't know.
Songs.
The songs.
Songs.
He just hasn't hit it.
Yeah. And again, I don't know how much of his effort goes towards, again, life's about choices, right? I chose to be an educator. He, you know, has his own stuff, but he also produces, but most of his work, it seems, is studio work. Those are choices that you make.
Right.
The reason people like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, your Eddie Van Halens of the world, the reason that they are, you know, often lauded as, you know, the best of the best is because it takes the song to show the world. In other words, the virtuosity is a passenger in the passenger seat of the car, which is the song, you know what I mean? Which goes to everyone. That's the point. You can be phenomenal, but the other part of that is, can you write something consistently that non-musicians get stuck in their head and sing to themselves in the car on the way home, that their spouses and their kids or whatever hum around the house? That's the thing. And that's what separates the people from that super, super high tier, where maybe everybody's on the same technical level. Like, you can certainly say a Josh Smith and Stevie Ray Vaughan are at the same technical level. I will absolutely give you that. But it's the songs. It's the songs, man. Right. You got to have the songs or no one knows you.
Right. Well, and no disrespect to Stevie Ray Vaughan, because I was, you know, I grew up, my bar days, you know, you mentioned L.A. I moved actually to Delaware from San Diego. You know, I spent a lot of time down on the 101 and a lot of pool and a lot of small bars along the coast. And, you know, my first dollar went to the jukebox was always Stevie Ray Vaughan. So
yeah,
loved Stevie Ray Vaughan. And you listen to a guy like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you think, how can you get any better? Right. And then you listen to a guy like him and you're right. It is the songs. There's, you know, there, but he's just a guitar virtuoso, so to speak. I mean, you think, wow, I don't know if it could get, oh yeah. Okay. It gets different and it gets better. And so I'm joking when I say better than Stevie Ray Vaughan, but when you think of a Stevie Ray Vaughan, you think, I don't know of anybody that could play anything more interesting than what Stevie Ray Vaughan's already played. And then you got a guy like Josh Smith, and the problem is he also looks like he just came off a tractor, right? He's not like, you know, he's not flashy. He's not wearing a trench coat, rattlesnake boots. Yeah. You know, he's not golden rings on every finger. You know, he's just a, It looks like you could be, you know, your school teacher, so to speak.
It's, I'm telling you, man, it's for all genres. It's for all art. There are so many examples of excellence, of people that have put in the 10, 20, 30,000 hours who are just spectacular. But the amount of people that are at that level and create something memorable and timeless consistently over and over again that people outside of that art remember and keep coming back to, that is a very, very small pool in the grand scheme of things. It is very, very, very rare to find that. You can find great people everywhere, but it is very rare that you see great people consistently create things that people outside of their industry completely adore.
Can a guy like a Stevie Ray Vaughan pass away, and then almost like, I don't know how I would say this, like shut down the ability for anybody in that genre to kind of shine again for a while? Because, you know, you think of a guy like a Josh Smith and you think he's like, you know, he's influenced by that. What would that, blues? Would we just call that blues?
Yeah. I mean,
and he has a Stevie sort of sound, but when you're kind of in the same sound, you're like, well, listen, bro, Stevie passed and you're never going to be, there's only one Stevie Ray Vaughan. So I wonder if it kind of limits how a person like that can still shine in that blues genre.
Well, no, the answer is no. And the answer is no, because Stevie Ray Vaughan felt that way about Albert King. And Albert King felt that way about Hubert Sumlin, you know, and on and on and on and on. You know, you have, you know, and outside of the blues too, in any genre, in any art, you know, people always think it's a human condition to think that, you know, you can't come up with something new. You can't come up with something better. You're just going to sound like a copycat until somebody changes that script.
Right.
And that doesn't happen even every decade, you know, but when it happens, you know, it seems permanent, you know, like if you technically look at Stevie Ray Vaughan and Albert King's playing, it is very clear that Stevie is paying homage to him virtually with every note. Like it is quite literally, you know, that is the foundation upon which, you know, he built his house. But they are distinctly different sounds, you know, and that's just the way it goes, man.
Well, it kind of, you know, an example of that is, you know, and you mentioned him, and he, I will say that Eddie Van Halen is, to me, you know, he was the guy that was like, come on in, try guitar. You know, and you mentioned that, you know, I had the Floyd Rose and I had the Seymour Duncans or whatever he might have had at the time. But there was a time, and that was a great episode you did when you kind of, you know, just shared your thoughts on Eddie Van Halen, because, you know.
Yeah, he's a man.
Sad day, honestly, sad day.
That was one of the more torn up I've been from if you want to call it a celebrity loss, more than anything else I can really remember.
Dude, I cried.
I totally cried.
We podcast that day, and we did the Pearl Jam podcast. You know, Mike McCready loves to play himself a little Eruption. You know, Mike McCready likes to play a little Iron Maiden. You know, those are the days when I grew up. And, you know, my wall was completely covered in it. And I want to talk about this in a minute, but with Hit Parader and Circus Magazine and all Eddie, you know, I cut up all my albums. You know, where's all your album covers for your records? I cut them up there on my walls. You know, that's just, I didn't.
That's awesome.
I love it. But there was a time when, you know, an Eddie Van Halen, and then you got like a Steve Vai, or you have like, and everybody kind of fell under the umbrella of an Eddie Van Halen. It's like, it's good.
Exactly.
But you're influenced clearly by Eddie Van Halen. So, you know, even though Steve Vai, I guess it's up for discussion whether he was a better, or he's still alive. So whether he was better, he was definitely more, a little more, I don't know, creative. I don't know what you would say, but I didn't, you know, I loved Eddie. So I was never like, whatever, Steve.
It's the same conversation as we had before with Stevie Ray Vaughan and some of the others, or Josh Smith. You know, the thing about Eddie, again, is that there were people faster, technically more proficient.
Right.
But the songs consistently for decades that changed the game for everyone. It's a unique, if you want to get fast, you do metronome work. You know, if you want to do it, like, there is a process for all these things to get to, you know, that virtuoso, you know, kind of level, because at the end of the day, it's wooden wire, it's muscle, bone, and fiber, you know, and you can do it, but there are only a handful of people, if that, that changed it forever. And Eddie is one of them, you know?
Well, and when he passed away, you started hearing a lot of this isolated Eddie, you know, tracks.
Oh my God, I've been hooked on it. It's
And you know, it's funny because there you go through that period where like, yeah, he's just flashy. He just does the tapping. He's just, you know, and you're like, and you start buying into it a little bit. You're like, yeah, I guess, you know, because I grew up, you know, I was, and, you know, I would love to see a Randy Rhoads review because I was a,
yes, I need to do that.
I was a huge, so you were either in the Eddie camp
which
or
one
the Randy
which
camp.
Which one do you want? Which one do you want? Email me. Think about it.
I'll think find about me, it. I mean, find me
a live track. I'll do it for you.
Yeah, I was going to say any live, you know, Diary of a Madman, you know, any of that. I'll send you something. There's some great stuff on that Ozzy live album that, and you know, but you were either in the Eddie camp. So I grew up, you know, I was in the Eddie camp. My buddy Mace, he was Randy. Yeah. Randy's better. I'm like, no, Eddie's better. And, but you know, it was clearly two different sounds.
Yes.
But the you start buying into, oh, he's just flashy. No, now Randy's like more technical, and you know, I'm 16. Who knows what I'm thinking? But when you start listening to these isolated tracks of Eddie, and you're like, oh God, that's just good. That's just some good stuff.
I would highly encourage anybody that's interested in this topic to check out Dweezil Zappa. He was on my channel a month ago or so, and he dropped a new podcast where every week he goes track by track with these famous guitar players, Vi being one of them, and they talk about what it was like when that album dropped for them and how it changed their life. And you get to hear people like Steve Vai, Nuno Betancourt, you know, go track by track, and like I do in the videos, and you don't get to see it, but you get to hear it. And they go like note for note in the solos, and you get to hear these guys who are at the top of the mountain just gush like they're 13 again. Just like, you don't understand.
Listen, human like, beings can't I, you do know, this. I appreciate those guys, but I like watching your show. I like you because you're like just a guy like me. You know, Dweezil Zappa, we're at a different level now.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, I don't think Dweezil will come on my podcast, you know. I mean,
he's a nice guy. You never know.
No, he's a nice guy. And listen, I'm just kidding. I'm just, you know, go check out his show. But I, you know, what I appreciate about you is that, you know, I always say their Eagles were great because I could always feel like I was the sixth member, you know, when I sang along, you could harmonize, you could fit in. There's nothing worse than being intimidated right out of the group.
That's everything, man. I completely agree. I meant to mention this before, but I mentioned that, you know, I started teaching online in 2013. I didn't start this React series and get any traction on YouTube at all until last fall. So for like 7 years, I didn't find a platform that worked. And it was because of exactly what you're talking about. It's because it was stiff, it was stodgy, it was like a lesson. It wasn't this inviting thing where, you know, you feel like we're getting to know each other. I was trying to do this polished thing that everybody tries to do. So exactly what you're saying is true in music, it's true on YouTube, it's in general.
Yep.
You know, having people feel like it's somewhat theirs and they're welcome is a huge component of it.
Well, I mean, you watch it. I'm like, he's got like some hairs on his shirt, you know, like, you know,
oh my God, yeah.
I mean, it's like, you're just a real guy. That's what I appreciate. I don't, no disrespect to anybody, but I just like that. And I'd like to feel like, you know, I can fit in here. I can fit in in with your show.
I love it. I love
it. It's funny because I started watching last fall.
I mean, that's when YouTube started recommending my videos.
I don't know what happened. I don't know why you showed up, but you did.
It's because I don't know if you know the story of how I started doing these react videos, but
I don't. That's why I had you on the podcast. I wanted to hear about it.
All right. So I'll give you the second little piece of the story. So this goes back to you, what you were talking about before about how you stopped taking resumes for new music, you know, like when you were young.
Yeah.
Same thing. We all get in our ways, right? And, you know, certainly when you're in your teens, that's the most impressionable you are, your mind is to new music. And that's why music is so nostalgic to that era. And there's a bunch of studies on that. But anyway, I made the commitment to go all in on the internet and teaching in 2013. Bunch of things happened. Basically did everything wrong. Lost money for 2 years. Then started, you know, getting better, learned internet marketing, ads, blah, 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 blah. You know, broke even for 2 years and then started paying bills after that, quit teaching. And then another year later, finally quit the band when I could afford to. Cause you know, we had a third kid by then. I was missing all the baseball and soccer games and all that stuff. And, you know, my life was at odds with that. But anyway, I say all that to say that about year, I don't know, six or seven, in 2019. So yeah, 6 years, I had gotten burnt out. I had made, I don't know, 400 or 500 YouTube videos and not a single one popped. But I was successful. I had made a living making courses and basically buying ads to drive people to my website to sell my guitar courses. I had been very successful with it. So I've been full-time doing this without another job for, you know, quite a few years now. And, but halfway through 2019, I put the guitar down. I stopped making videos because I already had like 10 courses or so. And I had tons of students and because I had worked many years to build it and I was just burnt out. And I've done this a few times in my life where I put the guitar down and came back to it later, you know? Was just burnt out on making content. And again, nothing on YouTube seemed to work and whatever. So I didn't play for a few months. And then I went to a Dead & Company show because my friends knew that, you know, my wife and I had gone to see John Mayer. She's a big Mayer fan. And I had never been into really the Dead, never been into jam music or anything like that, which is a different conversation. But we decided to go. And so we went and I'm sitting here the whole time. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Why is this guy who's a headliner on his own arena tour hiring hired gun musicians, taking a massive pay cut to be a hired gun in a cover band and take 15, 20 dates a summer off his own sold out headlining show? It's like, what the fuck's going on here? You know,
I have a feeling.
Yeah. I was like, why would someone do that? And so I was like, okay, let's go. Cause I've seen Mayer before and he did great, but I was never like a huge super fan or anything. And I went there and again, from my perspective, I was like, I got to see what this is all about. And I hadn't played in a while. And I go there and one, he seemed happier than I'd ever seen him play at any other times before. And two, he sounded completely different. Tone was different. Phrasing was different. He was doing, you know, backup singing for half the tunes. And I was totally digging the scene. And my wife turned over to me and she goes, you ever seen so many happy people in your life anywhere? And I looked around. I was like, no, actually. Usually when I'm at concerts, you know, if it, you know, I'm used to, if I don't leave with a cut or a bruise, how do I know I had a good time? You know? And I just went home and these songs were stuck in my head. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to dig into this because there's something here. There's something here. You know, why did this guy make this pivot? And he sounds so different and better and whatever. And so I went home and I started learning some of these songs. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm just going to put the camera on and show people what would happen or how I, what I think about new music, right? I'm just going to put the camera on. So like if I was a student or a teacher and someone brought and said, hey, teach me this Dead tune, I'd pull it up on YouTube. I'd play through it. You know, they're only here for 30 minutes. I'd give you the broad strokes of what I think, and then I'd send you on your way, right? Yeah. I said, you know what? I'm just going to record that instead of making this stiff, stodgy, scripted lesson like I've been doing for so many years and everybody does on YouTube, right?
Right.
And I recorded it and I'm going to put it up there. I'm like, well, I don't know what the hell to call this thing. I mean, it's certainly not a lesson that I can advertise as this is how you play it because I'm not getting everything. I'm not getting everything right. You know, I'm talking about.
Does your show have a name? I always just, what is it called?
It's just my name, Michael Palmisano. It used to be called the same on my website as GuitarGate. So I just started calling it Guitar Teacher Reacts because it is a reaction. It's more a reaction than a lesson. And dude, as soon as I did that, that shit popped, you know, and at 6 years and hundreds of videos later, I didn't give up and found my unique voice on YouTube. And that's kind of the story. And then obviously people were like, oh, you like that? You like this. If you like that, you like this. And it's turned into this thing where it's all kinds of different genres, it's all kinds of different things, and it's all about what we used to do when we were younger. And it's, you'd hang out with your friends and you'd say, oh, if you like this, you like that. And it's all about discovering new music, and I've never felt more like inspired and motivated to keep this thing in my hands and pick it up. And that's kind of what the whole community has been built around. And it's just like this crazy thing that just happened after so many years and being burnt out and just not giving up and, you know, finding this random wind of inspiration from Mare and the Dead. And it just is kind of snowballing, and I'm just kind of harnessing it and riding it with people like yourself.
Well, and like I said in the beginning of the podcast, you're very good at it. There's a guy that does reaction videos, he's clearly a producer of something. He's got
there's tons of people that do him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just not fascinated by him. I'm not really interested in it. I like your music. I'm not even there for learning how to play guitar. I like the music. I like that listening to you.
Blows me away. Now I'm starting to understand it, but the first 6 months or so, I would get so many emails from people to be like, I don't even play, but I watch all your videos. And I'm like, well, why are you watching my videos?
Well, and I thought what you were going to say about John Mayer is because he loves doing what he does.
Well, that is clear. I mean, and that's the, but you have to understand from my perspective, and it is a huge deal for someone like of his stature, you know, for someone who all they ever wanted to do was to be like a hired gun player and be on these big stages. It is such an unimaginable thing. I can't think of someone else of his status, sold out arena tours anywhere he wants to go in the world for decade plus, decides to take off, you know, a third or, you know, of his dates of paying people to be in his band, to be a paid member of someone else's band and play covers. That is unprecedented.
Well, at his level. And he was a bit of a surprise. I mean, I remember when John Mayer came out.
That's what I mean.
Like, he was like a teeny bopper guy. You know, I'm like, oh God, another one of these guys. And all of a sudden now he is like one of the most amazing guitarists I've ever seen play.
And this goes back again to what we spoke about before, the vehicle and the songs. He always had the chops. He always had, it was more blues based for sure. He always had the chops, but he let his songwriting chops, you know, and hit the way he presented it. That was his career was built around that. And then when he got into Jerry Garcia and got into that world and adopted that as its own vehicle for him to show off this other part of him, now all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, now he's like this guitar hero for so many people.
It's hard to really put a pin in what he is. What is he? He's like everything, right?
It's true.
Yeah, if I can just
get an
opinion or change the subject a little bit, you know.
Sure.
One of the things that, you know, my buddy Carlos and I, we do the Pearl Jam podcast, and our question to each other is, how can we love this band so much, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for us, they're just a talented band, great band, but, you know, and you mentioned the Napster days and prior to 2000, you know, it used to be, you know, the ability to have so much music wasn't so gluttonous, right? I mean, you can just basically shove all this. I mean,
I
don't know how many songs are in here, but any song I probably ever would want to hear is right there. And, you know, growing up, I remember living in San Diego, I guess 93, 92, and Pearl Jam had just come out. You got what you got. You got like a Headbangers Ball song. You got a, you know, maybe a video, mm-hmm. Maybe something on the radio, but that was it. So you just were constantly wanting more, mm-hmm. right? And you're like in search of, I mean, we talk about this all the time, how I used to go down to, there's a record store down in Encinitas called Lose Records, and they sold used CDs, you know, and I used to, you know, flipping through them, and there'd be a Pearl Jam, or there'd be some, you know, European version of Alive or Jeremy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it would be glorious. And so today it feels harder to build relationships with music as it comes out, as much as it used to be. I find it easier to build relationships with like reaction videos, like these things that you're bringing up. You've done several, John Mayer. You did one with him playing with a couple of African-American guys, and you're like, check out that drummer. Look at him. He's waiting. He's waiting. There. He's got it. It's like,
Yeah. Oh,
and I love how you know everybody's name. Oh, look at that. You know, I forget the name. I don't know the guy's name, but you knew both the drummer and the bass player.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want more of that. Just like that Brandy Carlile with that song. I'm like, I want that. And I'm rummaging through my phone. I can't find it. It's not there. Now I want it more. Now I'm looking. So it's tough, you know, I don't know how old your kids. My kids are 8, 9, and 15. They don't know what it's like to want music. You know, it's everywhere.
Any content. So mine are 10, 7, 4, and 10 months. We're in the thick of it. Yeah.
And if I had to carry another car carrier one more time, I'd jump off a bridge.
Oh, dude, it's unbelievable.
Strong, that right arm's strong, huh?
Yes, car carrier strong. But yeah, like my kids have no concept of commercials or things come on at a certain day at a certain time, or that music or movies there's like something you get at a store, like you hold in your hand. I mean, there's no, like, I remember, like, you're a Pearl Jam family. I remember opening up the double side Vitalogy, you know, and the manuscript in there. Like, I remember how big of a deal it was to take the paper off, you know, and see what was in there. And it was physical, you know, and so to your point.
And that's a tough moment because that, you know, that you had your cellophane guy and then your non-cellophane. Mm-hmm. So you were really, if you wanted to see what was in there, the cellophane had to come off.
Yeah. You had to buy it. You had to commit, and it cost real money. you know?
And you're rummaging through the liner notes. What's Eddie saying to me here?
Dude,
what's
Vitalogy cost? Yeah, Vitalogy cost, I think it cost like $22 or something when it came out, you know? Which is what, like $50 today or something? I don't even know.
I think you can still get it. You can still get it LP. It's probably okay. 50.
Yeah, right. But and your buddy who would come show you this, he'd let you listen, but then he'd take it home, right? He'd take it. Or like you could go for a ride in your friend's car and check something out, but you're not taking his CD, you know? And so it
can
was
I borrow this, I'll tape it, give it back.
Yeah, it was this thing where like it needed a host, like someone had to show it to you. And you also had to like earn it. And there was like a possession thing about it. Almost all of those are gone, except we can, through your podcast, through my thing, through whatever, we can still kind of be hosts and show people what we like, why we like, take requests. That part is still kind of there. And so I totally understand what you're saying. The hard part is being the host, filtering through the noise and finding the good stuff that people don't know about that's new, because there's so much out there. It's overwhelming. There's so much noise. And I have found that like-minded people, like sold people, however you want to say, tend to identify with similar music that have similar undercurrents, regardless of genre. Good people like good music, and those that choose to share it take pride in it. And so I have found that the bigger my community gets, the more people like you choose to reach out and share, okay, here's my little diamond in the rough that I found. You know, here's my little thing that I found. And it's so cool, because I know, just like you perhaps wouldn't have found her or some of the others through me, I wouldn't have found it if that dude didn't trust me enough to send me that email, right? Well, it's a whole thing, you know.
Well, but it's a relationship, and it's like friends, and you know, you have their friends, and you know, you, oh, there's Billy, oh, someone's with Billy, but if he's with Billy, I'm sure we're gonna like him because he's with Billy. And it's kind of like,
that's exactly it.
You're Billy, and you're bringing friends over and introducing them to us. And I'm like, well, Michael likes them, so I like Michael, so I'm probably going to like it. Whether I can't say I've liked every bit of music. You know,
sure,
there's,
sure.
You know, I mean, I love bluegrass, but, you know, it's kind
of, not your thing.
I mean, it is, but so, you know, I can shift pretty quickly out of it. But, you know, but you like it. So I'm like, I'm going to listen. And Josh Allen, I'm, you know, and you're also giving people like a Josh Allen, like a Hers, you're, a lot of people. There's, like I said, I don't really make any notes for this, but there was a lot of people that you've done, that you've brought, and that, you know, so you're also kind of helping a lot of these bands, you know, get their music out.
Dude, I got one coming out today. Let me pull this up. Oh. I got one coming out. I might even make it public right now on your thing. You know who Morgan Wade is?
I don't, but I'm going to find out.
Morgan Wade has like, I don't know, maybe 800 subscribers or something. But someone sent me this, and she has this song about sobriety. It is a really, here, I'll tell you what, screw it.
Screw it.
Here we go. Watch it. Public. Maybe you'll get an alert right now. Let's make it happen. Bam.
I don't subscribe. I'm not subscribed.
You're not subscribed?
I'm going to have to now, but I'm not the guy that needs to be reminded. I go look for it. Listen, I have a routine. I work all day. I come home. I cook all our family dinner. We sit on the couch at the end of the night, and I watch educational television, and you are one of the things I will find. So I don't, I'll subscribe because I know that helps your channel, but I don't need to be reminded. I look forward to, and then I watch my Minecraft videos.
You know, I love that because it sounds ridiculous, but I, I didn't even know there was a subscription feed on YouTube for everything you were subscribed to, just so you could only see what you're subscribed to till like last year. You know, like I was like you, like I sometimes I'd hit subscribe, sometimes not, but I never really know if it did anything because that YouTube would just serve you, you know, what it seemed to work.
Yeah, I'm in a bad place right now with my YouTube. I've watched too many things of the same. Now it seems like it's all I get, and I need to like Google like transmission replacements or something just to freshen up,
just to change it up.
Reset my algorithms in my YouTube.
Well, anyway, check out Morgan Wade. She is you know, obviously an up and coming artist, and she's got some really strong people backing her. You know, she's got people from like Jason Isbell and the 400, his band, doing her new album. But she only has, you know, 800 subscribers or so. But she's one of those people like you look at, and I say this in the video, where you're just like, this person has really lived a life. You know, those people who are 25, but you can tell inside they've lived like 50 years. She's got that look. And,
I wrote her name down, you know, because I'll if she has music on Spotify, I'll bring it to the New Music Podcast.
I don't know if she's dropped her album yet. I think it's about to drop. Anyhow, I forget what we were talking about before. Just like, you know, the host or whatever. But that's true, man.
I was saying you're like the, you know, you're Billy, who's bringing a lot of friends, and we love Billy, so we love your friends.
That's it, man. It's, you're not reinventing the wheel. You're just finding a new way to spin it. It's true.
Tell me about the barn.
All right. So,
cause you changed spots. I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for the barn. I'm looking for chickens and stuff. And now I haven't seen any animals.
Now I'm in this room, right?
The barn.
Okay. All right. So here's the deal. So I was in a studio in my basement for years, and that's what most of the videos, if you search for me, you'll see me in that room. Mm-hmm. And there's like a glass door behind me. You'll see my kids running back and forth, and it's very chaotic.
Sure.
Let's just say that one, I grew out of that space just professionally, and two, that it is virtually impossible during a pandemic to run any media content, anything, with four kids who can't go to school because of virtual learning, and with an infant. And it's just, so for every reason, I had to find a place to work outside of the house. I had absolutely earned that and wanted it very much, because I wanted to do full band stuff and all kinds of stuff. So I have a family friend who has a barn a couple miles from me, and she wasn't using it. And she was like, you can work out of the barn, but the barn does not have heat or internet. So
that's a barn. So,
Right. That's a barn.
That's a barn. That's what we call a barn.
Yeah. But the idea is I want to add heat or internet and then lease it from her. And so she can justify, you know, putting in heat and internet and have like a barn studio. I like very, very much want to do that. But because it's winter and because it's COVID, it is not as easy as a phone call to do those things. Right. So there is also a furnished apartment in the barn, which is where I am now.
Ah.
So this has both heat and internet. And so I am here until we can get a contractor who, I don't know if, I'm sure everybody that's listening is intimately aware, if you're in the contractor, any type of remodel, anything that business during this COVID, you are busy until like summer, if not even next year. Like, it is impossible to get anything like that done. Those people, everybody.
And if they say they can, you don't trust them.
Exactly. I mean,
why aren't you busy?
All of my friends that are in that line of work, they were backed up before COVID. But I mean, it seems like everybody that
will be glad you're not trying to build an actual house.
Are you?
We are.
Is it so you're experiencing it?
No, we stopped that process because it's, you know, here at the beach, everybody is, like I said in the beginning, everybody's moving here. So you know, it's a seller's market, and throw, you know, the pandemic on top, the prices of everything have gone so high that I just don't know what to trust. So I said, you know, in fact, we're actually going to go look. We got a pretty unique situation that we're in the position that we can, you know, buy a house. And so we're going to maybe go look at new houses. I mean, they're at least built and priced already. That way, you know, we were going to build a house. We got three bids. All two of the bids were $100,000 more than the third bid. So,
right.
And the guy's like, yeah, they're just saying, listen, you want to build a house? That's fine, but it's going to cost you an extra $100,000 if you're that desperate. And I'm like,
yeah.
So we just, you know, pumped the brakes. Yeah. We have a house. We're good.
Exactly. And that's how I feel. It's like, okay, so I have this apartment that is not a barn, but I'm outside of my house. So, you know, whether spring breaks first, you know, or we can finally get someone to come in and do the heat, whatever happens first, then you'll start seeing videos in the barn. But until then, I'm at least one step closer. I'm out of my house. I'm now working 6 or 8 hours a day instead of 90 minutes a clip in between all the screaming and diaper changing.
Well, only a person that has four kids would maybe, or three kids may understand this, but do you in a way miss your kids? Do you miss that? Because
yes,
we're a family. Our family lives in the living room. You know, we don't, our kids don't stay in their bedrooms. We turned our dining room into a gaming room. So all the computers are in there. We're always all together. So I couldn't do this there, but you know, I get a lot of energy and joy from that energy.
Absolutely. The silence here is deafening. It is, you know, I've always worked in kind of a controlled chaos environment, even whether it's doing this or on stage or teaching, it's always fast. It's always, you know, very quick little deadlines. Like it's never been go to an office, have a list. Right. Part at the top, go down the list. And then when the day is over, so you're home at dinner, like I've never lived a life like that. It's always been immediate problem solve. It's always been what it is. And so you learn to thrive in that. Like every day is the day before your final exam or this paper. And every day is a cram. I've been living in that crammed world the entirety of my adult life. And so to finally have a little space and a little time almost feels wrong, you know?
Yes. Hold on a second.
You're good. Yeah. Like those, when you're recording and someone calls you and it pops up on screen. I can't tell you how many of those I left in the videos.
I know. It's crazy. Well, that's going to stay in there. It's my wife. My daughter's sick. She's taken to the doctor.
Oh, no.
Well, listen, Michael, I appreciate it, man. It's been an hour and I don't know, half an hour, 20 minutes. I don't want to keep you. I know you got a lot of stuff going on. Thank you, man. What a pleasure.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure on this end too. I appreciate you asking me.
And if you're ever down at the beach, you know, give me a call, come hang out at the studio. Bring a guitar, bring an amp. We'll put you on the Catch My Riff podcast with my buddy Devin Cranfield. And he just had a great band in here the other night. I love, you know, that's always been my dream, is a place where, you know, we can promote Delaware live music, you know, just local music, bring them in, mic them up, you know, it ain't perfect, but it gets the word out. And, you know, but thank you so much, brother. I mean, thanks not only for, you know, coming on the podcast, but, you know, just all that you've been doing. You've been a great source of music for me. I really enjoy it. And thank you. You're doing a fantastic job, brother. Don't stop.
I won't. No, I feel very invigorated by people like you telling me so. It really gives me confidence and strength that I'm doing the right thing with my life.
Well,
so
and people let them know. I mean,
they let me know.
I'm not I won't even do YouTube. It's just my brain will explode. Like Elon Musk on Joe Rogan's. He's like, have you thought of battery powered airplanes? He's like, my brain will blow up. Like I can't do any more. Right.
I could watch Elon Musk on Joe Rogan indefinitely.
Dude, I'm a huge Elon Musk fan. I just love that guy.
I was watching some this morning.
He's so funny. He was so, He was so tickled by, I don't know, something somebody said, some fart. I think he talked about a fart or something. He could not stop laughing. I'm like, wow, this guy. And he's like the richest guy in the world.
He's so hilarious. That first 15, 20 minutes of the first episode he did with Joe, where he talks about the flare guns, whatever they're called.
The flamethrower.
You know, the flamethrower. And he's like, so how many did you make? He's like, 20,000.
$500 a piece.
Yeah. He's like, why'd you do that? He's like, well, we needed, at first we wanted to raise $1 million. And so we made, you know, hats. 500 hats at $20. And so then we're like, let's go for 20. So let's make 20,000, or let's go for 10 million. So let's do 20,000. It's like, who does that?
Well, and I wanted to comment before I reminded myself, I wanted to say that, you know, you do stuff like this and you don't get recognized and you grind through it. And people are like, how much money are you making? That always is the question. What are you making? How much money are you making in doing these podcasts? I'm like,
yeah,
you know, I don't make any money. I'm not in it for the money. I love chatting. I love, you know, learning. You know, we've been given this vehicle. I call it a brain car. And, you know, I'm trying to make the most out of it by meeting and having all as many relationships with all wonderful people I can.
Yep. It's everything.
It's not about money. It's just about this. And, you know, there are times where you're like, geez, you know, not many people listened or, you know, nobody cared. And it's easy to get discouraged, but John Mayer, you know, at some point you do it because you just love doing this. And
100%.
And I love podcasting and I don't care about money. You know, I always say, you want to ruin me, win the lottery. You know, that's the end. You know, I loved being hungry.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So obviously you don't need to hear this, but you know, don't give up, brother. You're doing fantastic. And I think you're gonna, maybe you won't have time for me next time, but we'll see.
That's not true, but thank you. You're doing a great job too. I appreciate you having me. You're a great host and let's stay in touch.
Absolutely, man. And like I said, we may have a new house by next summer. So maybe if you come down, we'll have a place for you guys to crash out.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Yep. Take care.